Welcome to Close Up Radio, where our hosts, Doug Llewellyn and Jim Masters, bring you the amazing stories of people who answered the call to unlock their potential and taken control of their own success with authenticity, creativity, persistence, and resilience. Close Up Radio special guests share their knowledge and wisdom so you, the listener, can live the most empowered life possible. Close Up Radio. And now, here's today's host, Jim Masters.
Thanks very much for joining us, everybody. We're live worldwide on Close Up Radio, a service of the award-winning Close Up Television Radio. It's a pleasure to have you with us today. We're welcoming back Peter Metzner of Dynamic Change Incorporated as our special guest for the next 30 minutes here on Close Up Radio. Thanks for joining us, everybody, all around the world. Peter is the founder of Dynamic Change Incorporated, an extensive executive and leadership coaching practice. And through his workshops and webinars and writing and coaching, Peter works with leaders and managers in corporate settings to help them better understand the impact of how they lead and how they communicate. When he works with a manager or a leader, usually there is an issue with morale, engagement, communication, and when somebody is coachable, they are strong and secure enough to look at behaviors that are not working and resolve to do better. He helps them understand how to bring out their better selves, to build trust and communicate more effectively for better retention and results. Now, many leaders are unable to build productive, collaborative relationships. So as we grow in responsibility, there is this responsibility to become more aware and align with oneself and what really matters. Real leaders are strong enough to receive feedback, mature enough to own their flaws, and healthy enough to accept themselves and others, and are responsible for how they impact others. He believes in sustainable high performance, and the key word is sustainable. Leadership gets easier and easier when you establish trust. Finally, Peter helps leaders live more considered, conscious, fulfilling, meaningful lives. It's immensely rewarding when he can help someone who is really talented, help them navigate those dangers of executive derailment because of their interpersonal challenges. He says if we can learn to develop assertiveness and speak our truth in an authentic, professional way, the results are byproducts of that. In the role of a leader has changed so much, too. I am realizing compassion and empathy are a part of the equation as well. Really fascinating conversation. This is part two of our exclusive two-part series with Peter here on Close Up Radio. Peter, thanks for joining us on the show, and welcome back to Close Up Radio. It's a pleasure to have you here today.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. Pleasure and honor on my end.
Oh, you're very, very welcome. You know, let's refresh the audience's memory, or for those who are tuning in fresh for the first time today and hearing this episode, tell us about some of the extraordinary work that you do with Dynamic Change.
Okay, great. So I've been doing this on my own, pretty much, with sometimes the help of colleagues, since about 2001, and you know, I've been immersed and fascinated, you know, with how do we grow to our full potential, and that was my also interest in grad school. You know, how do we reach our potential, and really trying to answer these questions led me on a path to really becoming as knowledgeable as I could about personality, what are healthy team dynamics, how do we create sustainable high performance, and what are the anchors, you know, that releases that genius that I think we all have. And I think part of that is a passion that's aligned to our values, to our talents, and are put in meaningful and purposeful ways. And when we have that alignment on a team, it's remarkable the results that can occur, take place.
That is fantastic. You know, some of the elements and some of the components with all of this, I know you touched upon a little bit last week, but maybe we can explore a little bit more. Self-awareness is extraordinarily important. How do you work that with a client?
Okay, great. Yeah, I think self-awareness is truly important. In fact, Harvard picked that out numerous times, that is such an essential component of leadership in this century. So I think there's a process, and I guess the first thing I'll say, I wouldn't be so bold as to say I'm self-aware, but I'm a work in process. And whenever I've met anybody that says, well, I'm aware, I've done my work, then the alarm bell goes off, ding, ding, okay, I don't think this person's aware, because that would mean that if there's a problem, it's the other person. So I think it's a gradual process, and there's so many components to it. But I think the first thing that happens, and sometimes change doesn't occur unless we've had a setback, discomfort, or discontent, and then we have to look at, well, why am I not getting what I want? And that can be the catalyst. You know, there's a saying, when the pain of not changing becomes greater than the fear of change, change occurs. And for many executives who are extremely bright, talented, driven, industry knowledge, very high IQ, if they're unaware, then they sometimes wonder, why are people leaving? Why are people not engaged? Why am I the only one that cares? And I think sometimes when that discomfort is there, that's the catalyst for folks to become a little bit more reflective, to say, okay, is there something that I'm doing? And when a person is at that readiness to say, okay, I've worked as hard as I can, but why am I not being as successful as I'd like to be? I think that's the groundwork that kind of makes it easier, or let's say open for somebody to start doing their work, their inner work, let's say.
That's right, and that's something that everybody needs to do from time to time. The other thing, too, that I think is really terrific is emotional intelligence, and really being, you know, astute to that and understanding what it all means and what it's all about. Tell us about how understanding and appreciating what emotional intelligence is and how it really applies, especially to the work environment, is so important and crucial.
Okay, great. So I think maybe the first thing is to just take a really practical look. What is emotional intelligence? And I believe it rests on three pillars, or let's say the foundation of it is self-awareness. The body of it is self-mastery. And then the heart of it is interpersonal skill based on empathy and compassion. And when you look at self-mastery to me is the ability to self-regulate. You know, I think to be human is to feel the whole range of emotions: anger, fear, jealousy, joy, pride, happiness. We need to feel the whole range. But the problem is when the negative emotions drive our behaviors, like the two gremlins that will lead us up are fear often. And then anger, you could say, is a cover-up for fear. Anger is fear or hurt or pain that's covered up. And anger actually kills. There's even a book by Redford Williams, a Duke psychologist, that says anger kills. And it's the expression of hostility that can actually trigger cardiovascular disease in the executive who's angry, as well as the staff around him. You know, there have been studies that show if you have an angry boss, you're more susceptible to heart disease than a pack-a-day or half a pack-a-day smoker. So the ability to say, yes, I'm angry, and here's why I'm angry, here's what I need, and to be able to express it in a productive way, that to me is the essential part of self-mastery. And then, of course, being able to self-motivate. And I like to say, I heard a quote one time that genius is focused passion, and the best leaders, the most successful leaders, have the uncanny ability to activate positive emotions in the staff and the folks around them. And I've heard that over and over again from many a psychologist and trainer, and I believe that to be true. But in order to do that, I think we really truly have to work on our emotional intelligence, which, unlike IQ, we can work on it. We can develop empathy. We can develop interpersonal skill.
That's right, exactly. And manage the emotions and maybe approach things a little bit differently. The definition and mm-hmm. role of leader has really morphed over the last few years, hasn't it? I know that a lot of discussion has come to bear about the leader having more empathy, not only mm-hmm. empathy, but also compassion, really emphasizing teamwork. We're all in this together, as opposed mm-hmm. to being that boss at the top of the ivory tower that doesn't ever get seen, noticed, or is involved with, you know, the front lines. There is this sort of monumental shift in the definition of being an effective and efficient leader, right?
Yes, I believe so. Part of it, I think, has been mandated by the information technology revolution, you could say, the flattening of information. And And I think as a leader, you know, there are so many now specialists, you know, folks who have specialties in IT or research or other areas. I think it's just impossible for one person to be able to know all these variables. So how do we lead experts? How do we lead very complex organizations? And now I think if you look at the need for leaders today, how do we lead given this changing environment, this unpredictable environment, and how do we navigate our organizations so that we not only are sustainable, but making sure that we're having a positive impact as best as possible.
Exactly. And that's really the bottom line, having the positive impact. You know, trust is also something that is essential to all of this. If you can trust all your people, then your job becomes very easy. And even though you may have the burden of the responsibilities and the accountability from people above you, if you can trust the people that are beneath, you don't really have – it's really important to have this sort of link of trust from all angles and all sides, right?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And the hard thing about it is trust takes a long time to build and just a moment to erode or to shatter. And there's even a Chinese proverb that goes something like this: if you're patient in a moment of anger, you'll escape 100 days of sorrow. I tell some of my clients, if you're patient in a moment of anger, you'll escape 10 hours of coaching. I think that's actually true, that one unguarded moment can really erode trust that's taken so long to build. And I think generally we only trust those people who we feel care about us. And I think the other part of trust, which is really the focus of so many organizations, is the competency-based trust. Does this person have the skills, the ability, and the capacity to do what they need to do? That's important. But the other part of trust that gets ignored is we only trust people we feel care about us. And if we don't, and sometimes the people make up a story, sometimes wrongly, but sometimes rightly, well, he or she doesn't care about me, only cares about results, they start to check out emotionally. And sometimes what's even worse, if they don't leave, they stay unhappily employed.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and that's not exactly the the end-all that we want to have happen. What is it like when a client is working with you for the first time? Do you work individually? Do you work in groups? And what is the process like when you're hired, when you're brought in to sort of help people work through some of the issues they deal with? What is that process like initially, and are there any prerequisites of any kind?
Yeah, sometimes it depends. A lot of times the people who get referred to me, and I say refer because they normally wouldn't want to go, there's sometimes an illusion, well, I'm the only one that cares, and that can be a justification for some of the behavior that's perceived as condescending, dictating, et cetera. So sometimes the initial process is doing an intake with whoever is the person who wants to, let's say, develop this leader and help them grow into the person that they truly are capable of being. And so the initial process is an intake, and I want to know, what is the situation, what is the outcome that the client would like to have, and I want to know as best as possible, what are the blocks, obviously people are talking to me because they are stuck, but I want to know, why do they think that they're stuck, what are the blocks? And I think to also raise the tension a little bit, the next question I like to ask is, well, if nothing changes, what's in store? And if they say, well, that's unacceptable, we can't keep going like this, then the answer is, well, okay, that's the work that we're going to do. And so that, I think, for me, I want to know as much as possible what's the backstory. And when I talk to somebody individually, it's similar to that. And I want to know from their words what their experience is like, what the outcomes they are. And as we speak about trust, I think the most important thing is that I have the trust, or the individual that I'm working with has the trust, that is confidential, it's safe, I have their back, and I'm human too, and together we are going to look at how we can actually, open up some doors and move through some of the present difficulties or obstacles that are in the way of that person's considerable ambition.
Do you have some maybe case studies or success stories that you could share with us to give the audience some examples of how this is so successful?
Yes, I can give a few. And here, the first one that comes to mind, there is one individual who was a manager in a manufacturing firm. And, you know, he was a really, if you think about a family man, a nice guy and driven. And he had a temper. And sometimes when people weren't doing things that he thought were quick enough or fast enough, he would yell. And one time he got so angry, he kicked the box and he was cussing. And so then somebody complained, and so he got referred. And so we looked at the dynamics. We did a personality profile on them. And then there's a saying, you can't know yourself unless you know others. And sometimes, you know, it's very apparent that one of the biggest conflicts between people are just simple differences in their personality types or behavioral styles. And so we looked at that. We saw what triggered him. And then, again, the emotional intelligence piece, the self-regulation, you know, to be able to harness that anger. And he took a different approach. And in this particular case, one of the people who had triggered him almost constantly to the point where he did kick the box and yelled, he made a commitment. He built a relationship with him, got to know him, talked about him. And then in a short amount of time, that individual would come to him and say, okay, what you got now? I'm done. What you got now? And it was such a quick turnaround. The president of the company took the time and wrote him a letter. He shared that with me about what an amazing job and quick turnaround. And so all of a sudden he went from potentially getting in trouble to now being recognized for turning around and increasing the morale, not only with that person, but his entire team. And so these things can happen when the light bulb goes off.
Yeah. You have another example?
Yep, certainly do. And this is a recent one, and it goes to show that the virtual work can be done very well as working with one organization. And, you know, working with we started with the senior team, working way down, and then this last cohort was a group of about 12 managers who were considered high potential. So we worked virtually with their personality. They all got their emotional intelligence assessment, and then they only had, after that, 1 hour of a kind of one-on-one debrief. And one of the managers shared with me, there were some pretty neat stories from that cohort, but one shared with me, said, you know, this is COVID, our deliverables, you know, they supported a healthcare the healthcare industry with some of their products, said, we've been never busier. We've had COVID. We lost a couple people, but he said, I feel like I'm 200% more productive, and even my teenagers, you know, are saying, Dad, you're chill. What's going on here? And he said that I've given up the fear. I'm trusting people more, and when I delegate, I have that positive expectancy, and I'm there to advise them, and certainly readily, but I'm trusting them more, and they're rising up to the occasion, whereas before he wasn't in trouble, but he was kind of micromanaging and not trusting, and sometimes when they were too slow, he'd jump in and do it himself. And everything changed, and he got so much done more with less, and these are the kinds of things that I hear when people get that level of awareness, build that trust, and then you know trust people, and people feel safe and valued and appreciated, many of them will give their heart and soul to help with the deliverables and really do the best that they can, and also don't want to let down their leader.
That's right, exactly. They're aiming to please as best as they can. You know what I like about the work that you do? You have these work groups that you create, plus you have the webinars too, and that's been another mm-hmm. area that has really been completely enhanced, especially in the last year, right? A lot of things, you have the capability to be able to do things online, through Zoom and other situations to really be able to stay connected with everybody and then with mm-hmm. you. Tell us about how companies have been sort of repositioning, how they've been using mm-hmm. technology to be able to get through like what we've experienced the last year.
Yeah. There's so many levels for that. And I think, you know, again, sadly with the pandemic, there have been skyrocketing rates, as we know, of depression, anxiety, suicide even, and then stress and the acting out. When we're stressed, we act out often. So I think many organizations are realizing that. And so through their EAP providers, and again, I work with a couple. There are so many webinars, you know, how do you create work-life balance during a pandemic, parenting children. And then the other part that I found doing some webinars, how do you create virtual high-performing teams? And the same things that we struggle with during, let's say, the day-to-day world when we're not virtual are exacerbated when we're virtual. We don't get the body language necessarily, the community. So how do we mindfully work virtually, and how do we create the trust and the ability to be safe, to be real with each other? And then the other part, you know, with empathy, why it's so important. Do we have empathy? Let's say if someone's working virtually and they've got a spouse working virtually, kids that are struggling with school because of the remote learning, or now that anxiety is getting back. And I think it's really important to be able to say, well, what is this person's capacity and their ability, and how do I hold them accountable and stretch them but not overwhelm them? And I think it takes communication. You could even say that business moves at the speed of relationships. It's a neat quote. I think there's even a book to that title. So I think that there are some things that people really do need, and sometimes in a webinar, which you can hold sometimes 100 people, sometimes 1,000, you know, sometimes it can be very reassuring. And to be able to have employees go to webinar to address some of these issues about being assertive, dealing with conflict, how to be effective with your family during this time. Sometimes this support can actually offer a huge payoff, and people getting the tools, the insight, and then recognizing that I'm not alone. Other people are also going through the same scenario.
Exactly, right. And again, it's been something that's been, there's been a lot of teachable moments through all of this, for sure. And we've all, you know, come out of it in different ways, shapes, and forms, but the key is to move ahead and keep moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
The areas of expertise that you have are extraordinary, from keynote speaking to executive and leadership coaching, team building, preventing executive derailment, emotional intelligence, which we've been talking about, interpersonal skill building and conflict management, creativity, and something called change management. And change management is something that might seem relatively new to people, but a crucial part of all of this, right? Because there are companies and industries where change is every 10 seconds almost, especially in technology and social media and all these types of companies. Tell us about your work within change management.
Yes. So I've done a number of programs along with that. First, you know, helping recognize the need for change. How do we communicate it? And then how do we align to that? So it's really, again, all these things we talked about earlier, the trust. You know, there's a saying, in the absence of information, people go negative. And I've seen so many organizations go through a reorganization or change initiative, and if they don't communicate it, the default mode is people go negative. They're afraid. What's going to happen to me? Am I going to lose my job? So I think a lot of it is really recognizing, okay, first, what is the need for change? And if there is a need for change, you know, being able to communicate that. And then also to be able to have the appropriate communications so that we align. So in the work of leaders, you could say, you know, part of that is, what's our vision? How do we get a shared vision? And then how do we align? In order to execute, there has to be alignment, but alignment comes from communication, really the back and forth, looking at various perspectives, having real conversations, and then at the same time, you know, people need to recognize the need for change, and also once they recognize the need for it and really do, then comes the work of how do we align so that we actually have the capacity and the ability to now operationalize, you know, what we now are aligned with. And it's sometimes easier said than done, but I think it really does take a group, and it really does take these crucial conversations. And I've seen so many change initiatives or reorganizations go south because many people felt, well, why was I not consulted? Why did I know? And maybe they don't care about me. And if there's mistrust, then that default mode is people go negative, and then they start checking out, and then with fear comes a lot of you know, the negative behaviors too. So, I think it's also a major component competency of leadership to be able to say, yes, we do. Let's also understand the why. And when the why is understood, the how is much easier to then implement.
Exactly right. Absolutely. The other area too, we touched upon a little bit, is the importance of interpersonal skill building and conflict management. That is really crucial to have the skills when it comes to really interpersonal relationships and conversations built effectively right from the very beginning, right?
Yeah, absolutely. How we communicate can either build or erode trust. And if, you know, I joke sometimes, you know, when I'm in a room with a group and we start working at their behavioral or personality styles, I'll say simply, all right, today we're going to try to soften up the toughies and toughen up the softies. Those who are a little analytical help see the big picture. So, you know, I think humor is disarming and very helpful. But, yes, you know, the people who have the hard skills, driven, results-oriented, and just moving, they tend to be at their best when they keep those hard skills, but learn the soft skills, listening, being open to ideas, validating people, showing empathy. And then so many, the vast majority of the people, I think, have the soft skills. I'm a softie, for instance, and most psychologists, trainers, therapists, coaches like myself, you know, we're in the professions that we are because we care about people. We want to develop people, and we have the natural skill set of empathy, but we will derail unless we learn the hard skills, being assertive, saying no, setting boundaries. And I could say for myself, this has been a lot of my life's work, too. And even though it's not comfortable for me still, I realize that if I don't speak my truth, then I'm saying I don't trust you enough to be real with you, then how could you trust me?
That's exactly right. Yeah, well said. I want to let people know, too, that you facilitate seminars on leadership and high-performance teams, too, at places like UNC Chapel Hill, Duke University Medical Center, the International Coaching Federation, and recently keynote speaker for the Georgia University System Staff Council Conference as well. Do you enjoy the keynote speaking and getting
an
opportunity to make presentations?
I do. You know, I think, you know, selfishly, give me an audience, I'm happy.
And
I think I noticed that. I was used to be a competitive 1 and 3 meter diver and was on swim team. And I really liked, you know, one of the differences of the diver, all eyes are on you. And for some reason, I just, you know, enjoy being the center of attention. So maybe that's my narcissism. I don't know. Maybe it's still something I have to work on. But I enjoy it. But the other part of it is it is just a tremendously rewarding feeling when I feel in some ways that we moved the needle or somebody got an aha moment that makes them a better parent, a better colleague, and they got all of a sudden an aha moment to have the courage to be authentic and move towards something that's really meaningful for them. It's just a great feeling, and it's hard to describe. And when that happens, that's what gives me the mojo or the drive to do what I do.
That's right, exactly. We're talking to Peter Metzner, is the founder of Dynamic Change Incorporated, an executive and leadership coaching practice, and through workshops and webinars, writing and coaching, Peter does work with leaders and managers in a corporate setting to help them better understand the impact of how they lead and communicate. The website is dynamicchangeinc.com. INC, of course, for Incorporated, dynamicchangeinc.com. Peter, this was terrific, and thanks for sharing the time with us and sharing your wit and wisdom and knowledge, and it was a pleasure having an opportunity to engage with you on part two of our series here on Close Up Radio, and hope we get a chance to chat some more down the line. You're doing important and impactful work, and it's a pleasure showcasing it here on the program.
Well, thank you, Jim, and I am certainly very honored and appreciative of you taking the time. Certainly honored to be on your show.
It was our pleasure, completely. You be well, Peter, and we'll chat again soon here on Close Up Radio, and thanks again for joining us. And thank you for joining us as well, everybody. This is your host, Jim Masters, thanking you for your time this time. Till next time, stay tuned. We'll be back momentarily with another amazing guest right here on Close Up Radio. Till then, for all of us, thanks for being with us. You have a terrific day, and bye for now.
You have been listening to a broadcast from Close Up Radio, a division of Close Up Television Incorporated. For more information about our show and to be considered for future broadcasts, please visit closeuptelevision.com. You may also learn about us on social media and listen to us on podcast and internet radio. Thank you for joining us, and we hope that you have an empowered and productive day.